As a matter of fact, she has perfect love. And once that you've experienced that, I think then you begin to understand why we're here. And when I see so many people that are doing such wonderful things, may I say to the volunteers that are here, that have helped the handicapped, you're better for it. Because whether you knew it or not, before you helped, you were handicapped. You were handicapped in spirit. You were handicapped in the lack of love. But once that you became a volunteer, you were released, you were emancipated, you were filled with goodness, and you removed the handicap of selfishness and of indifference and of apathy. So the person that's helped the most is the one that does the helping. Never forget it. Your life has been very much enriched. Well, now, what does it really take to do the job that you and I want to have done? I think I've mentioned it already. It takes volunteer power. It takes work power. And that's what you represent in this hall today. You're the citizen volunteers. You're the citizens volunteers of the President's Committee, of Governor's Committees, of local committees, in hundreds of communities. You are the partners of the professionals, of the physicians, of the rehabilitation specialists, of the placement officers of our employment agencies. Everyone here is a doer, is a helper. And believe me, we wouldn't get the job done without you. Now, if some volunteers could bring about the amazing progress that you've already achieved, just think what 2 times and 3 times your number could do. Just think if we could expand this army of volunteers in America, what we could do to help other people help themselves. So I ask, whom and how many of you have, well, let me put it this way, how many people have you recruited lately? How many people you asked to join you? Have you inventoried your list of volunteers? Have you shelved, or still better, brought to life any dead wood around your community? Dead wood who did not actually contribute to the cause? Have you reached out to every segment of the opinion molders and makers of your community? Have you gotten a hold of the Art Edgertons in your town and said, listen, let's have a little activity on the radio. Let's recruit the television. And I want to say right now, there's more beautiful human interest stories that could be covered by those amazing cameras on what's taking place with our handicap than any other segment of American life. Turn those lenses on what God's people are doing in this country, my friends, and see what the people can do. See what's happening. Oh, I go home to my own state and go to Camp Courage, Camp Friendship. When I think of what it means, when I've seen what whole lives saved. You don't mind if I emphasize that it's important, as it is as important to see a life saved as it is to see one taken? I think it's more important. And I think people ought to have that fulfillment, that sense of joy that comes of seeing a life saved, rather than having beamed into their living room every day, lives lost. I think people would like it. Don't you? Now, what about your constituency? Have you been out seeking jobs for everyone? Not just for the walking wounded, but for the elderly victim of degenerative disease, for those that are hidden away, the restored mind, for the totally rejected, yes, even the despised, the ex-alcoholic, the disabled ex-convict, the disfigured. These are the people that need our help. And frankly, that's the measure of greatness of a country. America is not a great country because the rich get richer and the healthier get healthier. America is a country because the disabled, the denied, the deprived get a chance. And that's the true measure of our greatness. Every life is worth saving, worth salvaging. Somebody said to me not long ago, why do you get so excited about this? I said, well, I'm in public life, and it's so difficult to know if you ever do anything that really counts. And I get a great source of personal satisfaction out of seeing one person helped. And may I say that if every American, every adult American could help someone else, we wouldn't have any problems. we could overcome most of our major problems. When I know, for example, in the war on poverty, that last year we were able to take 35,000 God-gifted, God-talented young people from the bowels of the ghettos. They were given examinations in their schools, poor schools, most of them, and they were found to have great intelligence, native intelligence. And we found 35,000 of them that had better IQs than some of the youngsters that were going to college under big fellowship grants. And 35,000 of them were lifted out of rural poverty, out of the ghettos of our urban centers, and they've been sent on to universities. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a great victory. That's 35,000 lives saved. We've lost 6,000 in Vietnam. We saved 35,000 right here at home. And when you think of the lives that have been saved with improved medical care, improved mental retardation programs, improved programs relating to the mentally ill, I tell you that there's a great story here to be told. I think it's the greatest story never told, most of the time. So what I'm really telling you is that while we're a very rich country, that we're not so rich that we can cast aside human resources. Our handicapped represent a tremendous resource. And those handicapped must be enabled to participate fully in every phase of society. We simply cannot afford to be deprived of their talents and their skills. This country's got too much to do. Too many people depend on America today for us to have anyone not pulling his share of the load to the best of his ability. We cannot afford the economic loss of their wasted ability. And we cannot afford in a free society to have anyone feel that they're not wanted, that there's no place for them. Because if freedom is good, it's good for everyone. And if opportunity is good for you, it's good for everyone. And the real test of American society is not what it does for the few, but what it does for everyone, indeed for the least of these. We cannot be faithful to our own inner voice, to our religion, to our ethics, by being untrue to those who have suffered some physical or mental misfortune. I believe in people helping people. A rather simple political philosophy. You know, I heard a preacher say not long ago, and this is the best sermon I ever heard. And I'll tell you, after you're in public life a little while, you need a few. Make no mistake about it. You get buffeted around in this business. You wonder just where you're going. And this sermon was on this theme. The way you treat people is the way you treat God. I think that makes an awful lot of sense. And I wish more people who profess great religious conviction, I wish that all of us that profess this would understand that the best way we have of demonstrating it is the way we treat people. So I believe in helping people. I think that's what government is for. I think Thomas Jefferson was right when he said the only legitimate objective of government is the health and the happiness and the well-being of people. That's Thomas Jefferson. Every time a new trainee learns a skill in a sheltered workshop, every time an epileptic punches a time clock in a good job, every time a blind person nimbly assembles a delicate instrument or gives a great broadcast, every time a paraplegic wheels up a ramp to an assembly line or a desk, every time an amputee or a deaf person, a mute, enjoys the thrill of opening a new pay envelope, he or she is giving testimonial to our enlightenment and our justice and our plain good sense. You know, I heard a story, and I just got to tell you this one. It's a beautiful story. It happened in New Orleans in our program in this war on poverty. You know, we have training programs. There was a lady there, a woman 28 years of age, who had had nothing but trouble all of her life. Her home was not a home. Three children and no husband. She was all mixed up. But a teacher, a priest, established a training program. And this young lady was recruited for that program, amongst others. She had tried before and failed. And failure has a terrible way of promoting more failure. But she got good guidance, and she learned how to be a secretary. And she was placed in a position in New Orleans in a company that publishes medical journals. She did well. At the end of the first 2 weeks, she got her first check. She came back to her teacher, and she had literally tears rolling down her cheeks in joy. She said, "Father, I've never before in my life ever seen a check that had my name on it that wasn't a relief check, one that I earned. This is my first one. I wish I could keep it. I'd like to keep it forever because it tells me that something's happened to me that's good. It tells me that I've earned this money and that I am a person." Well, she needed the money, so she had to cash the check. 2 weeks later, she came back. She had her second check, and she was overjoyed. Just overjoyed. A month later, she came back to report back to her counselor. She was still bubbling with enthusiasm and joy, and she said, "What a wonderful world it is." She said, "I've had 2 months now of employment and payment of my salary." And she said, "But I want to find out," she said, "Father, what are these little notes on the side about $16 here and $2 there?" And the priest said, "Well, those are taxes, my dear. You know, those are withholding taxes." "Oh," she said, "you know, I've never paid taxes before." She said, "I'm so proud. That really makes me a citizen, doesn't it?" And her teacher said, "Yes, indeed. Indeed it does. Those are your taxes, Social Security, withholding, and all the others." She said, "Oh, I'm so proud. My, what rehabilitation was taking place here." On the fourth month, she came back, and she said to her teacher, she said, "Father, I think it's just outrageous how much taxes the government's charging me." Now, my friends, that's rehabilitation. Total rehabilitation. She became a good participating American. Well, my friends, what we need is a whole series of these monuments of rehabilitation. Millions of living monuments of human beings whose enhanced skills and happier lives attest to their own and to society's faith in them. Now, this is my message of today. I came here to just be with you. It's a message of pride in your work, pride in the past. It's a message of salute and congratulations to the present, and it's my message of commitment to an even brighter future for the handicapped in the years ahead. So since I started this message by saying that you come at springtime and you bring us the breath of spring because you bring us the spirit of new life, can I just say, let's make all the year be springtime. The whole year, hope time. The whole year, fulfillment time for the handicapped. And above all, let's do this joyously. You know, Americans should be a joyful people. John Adams called it the spirit of public happiness. You don't prove yourself to be either an intelligent person or a great person by looking grumpy and grouchy. Just remember what we're doing. Remember the great things that we're doing, and remember the greater things yet to be done. And remember that you're living at a time when we have the capacity to do greater things than anyone ever dreamed possible. Be happy, not foolishly, not frivolously, but be filled with this sense of public happiness that comes in the knowing that you're a participant in the great affairs of a great nation. It comes in the knowledge that you're contributing something to this country. It comes in the recognition and the knowledge that you are important. You are the important one. And it is you and you alone that will make the difference. So get in there and pitch. Thank you, Harold. Thanks for letting me have the rostrum.